horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, hour two, at the races, Series XM, and Andy Serling with a 10 o'clock visit this morning. Andy, good morning.
It doesn't take much to get you excited, does it, Steve?
No, I can't remember the last time you joined me at 10.
It used to be on at 10 o'clock all the time.
That's true. Way back, that's true.
How far way back? Like a year?
No, it's been longer.
Yeah. I don't think it's been 11 that long, Steve.
I'm going to, Casey's
got the records.
Casey's got the records.
How are you doing today?
Excellent. Just had as always, a fun visit with Shug, and we talked Greatest Honor, who, the most controversial speed figure horse in recent memory.
Well, I think that probably has something to do with Gulfstream, doesn't it? I mean,
yes.
I mean, speed figures have been tricky. I mean, I can't pick on them saying, it's been tough to make figures on at Aqueduct this winter for a lot of figure makers, too. Tracks have been changing, and I think we've seen, heard complaints from at least a couple of figure makers about this winter. But, Gulfstream, unfortunately, listen, it would have been nice if they'd run more than one two-turn race there. I get it's a bit problematic because of the makeup of the track. And it's not like, once again, we haven't had days where we've run one two-turn race as well. But it makes it a little bit trickier. And I know they had some timing issues, as they often do down there. So, it made it hard. I know it's hard to know with Greatest Honor, because I think this was a worse race than the Holy Bull from a time perspective, which is what matters. And so the fact that he ultimately got the same figure as the Holy Bull, I think it starts to back up from the buyer perspective, at least, that maybe his number was a little bit on the low side in the Holy Bull. I haven't seen other people's numbers, so I don't know. I know that, Ragazin, Thorograph, and Timeform all had the Holy Bull a little bit faster than Andy did. I don't know where they stand on this race. As far as Greatest Honor, I think the jury's out on him. I'm not sure if he's fast enough. I wouldn't say it's a hugely deep three-year-old crop, but there are a number of, major horses, whether it's Mandaloon or Essential Quality, Life is Good, they've all been faster. I know that people like horses like Greatest Honor because they have a great affinity for deeper closers in these races, but the truth is that deeper closers in Triple Crown races are not necessarily overly effective, especially since the point system has taken a lot of the pace out of the Derby. And, people are going to make obvious comparisons, or because Shug trains them both, I'm not convinced they're particularly similar horses. I think Orb was much more pace-dependent than Greatest Honor. So we'll see. In Greatest Honor, he didn't seem to be running at all. In watching the race, and I felt like this, early in the race, that probably a horse like him is better suited to being out in the clear where he can make that unimpeded run. And it seemed like when he was sort of inside of horses on the backstretch, he wasn't really running. Maybe he just wasn't getting into stride. I don't know for sure. He won, which does matter. I don't think he's beaten anybody. It's very cyclical. I know, there's a time that, you heard people saying, oh, the Arkansas preps are always the best preps. And the best preps are the preps that attract the best horses or ultimately attract the ones, I guess, that become most successful. This year, I don't think anybody's going to confuse the overall group of three-year-olds down in Florida with Super Tough. And I think one of the reasons for that is that Todd Fletcher doesn't really have any particularly strong contenders in the Triple Crown races. So because of that, because Todd has been so dominant in Florida in the past, and often so dominant, he has to split up the horses he has in Florida, and that's why he's won so many races out of town while making Florida his base. It's just not the case this year. So partly because of that, but in general, the Florida three-year-olds, I know people are excited about what's that horse's name? That Prevalence.
Yeah,
the Godolphin horse, and you know he may turn into that horse, but he's still a maiden winner. I know a lot of people are, you know, getting all excited about another maiden winner on Saturday. Safi Joseph trains. What's his name?
The one that's coming up to New York, or
the one that won the maiden race on Saturday. Like I said.
Starts
with a C, I think.
Starts with a C, yeah. Collaborate.
But, I mean, you know, he's not going to win the Florida Derby, you know, in all likelihood. I'm actually thinking about that. Outside of two-year-olds, I wonder who the last grade one winner out of a maiden win, that won a maiden race in his last start was. Outside of two-year-olds, obviously. Two-year-olds do it fairly often, these days at least. Not to say he couldn't do it, but I'm not sure his race is the be-all and end-all that a lot of people are suggesting it was on Saturday. He may be a very nice horse, but I withhold judgment on that. Based on what we've seen down there overall this winter, he and Prevalence are probably two of the most impressive maiden winners. We'll see. You know, we'll see where Greatest Honor goes. He's not as good as Essential Quality, I think, at this point. I mean, the thing about Essential Quality is that he's gotten three very, very favorable trips in his three wins, his three stakes wins. It's not to say he's not a good horse, and certainly his running style allows him to get good trips. He's got the speed to be close if he has to be, but if the paces get hot, he can rate and be effective. Having said that, horses don't always get perfect trips, even if they're horses whose running style is conducive to getting them. So at what point, you know, does the fact that Essential Quality's had things go his own way, does that become somewhat problematic? I don't know. He seems like he's a pretty good horse, and I think right now he is fairly at the top of the class. But Mandaloon, a horse I didn't like at all, has proven me very wrong. He's been good. His last race was legitimate. His last two races were good. And we stretched out. He seems to be a better horse going long. Obviously, I have to respect Life is Good. I'm not as overall familiar as him and the others, but it is Bob Baffert when the horse is running fast races. So you'd be foolish to disregard him. Caddo River is going to run in the Rebel. He probably has to get a little faster, but I mean, it's not like he ran a bad race in his return race.
No.
So he's another horse that could be a very serious contender. You know, risk-taking, who, you know, at this point is the only horse we know that's going to Wood. There will be others, obviously. He's got to get a little faster, but he doesn't have to get that much faster to be competitive. He could. You know, he's a lightly raced horse that certainly has distance limitations, but, you know, he's probably a little behind Greatest Honor, but not that far behind him. Who else really is there at this point? I mean, it's just the Gotham. We'll see if any of those horses in the Gotham, are they horses that can get fast, you know, be fast going longer, highly motivated, ran a huge race at Keeneland on Breeders' Cup weekend. He got the biggest fire fig of any horse that ran on the two-year-old card, including the Essential Quality. But that was 6.5, I think, and he's going to have, and that race has been confirmed as fast by a lot of horses coming out of it and doing well. But does he really look to you like a horse that you think is going to thrive at 1.25? We'll see how he does at 1 mile, and we'll see from there. Maybe he is that kind of good horse, but I don't know. We'll see. You know, we'll get a better idea of him this weekend. So, you know, right now we've got a decent core of horses towards the top, and, you know, where's everybody else? I don't really think there is everybody else. And not that that's a bad bunch, but there isn't a lot of room for error, right? One or two of them get hurt or don't run well, and suddenly you're left with a fairly paltry bunch of horses at the top, right?
Well, and there is that potential, and you know, there's horses that are going to have their opportunity to kind of jump in here. You know, we got the Tampa Bay Derby on Saturday. There's a dozen in there: Candyman Rocket and Cassie.
He's got to get a lot faster, but he's lightly raced, and he could. He's got a good trainer.
In fact, let me give everybody a quick glance at both of these preps. Tampa, Candyman Rocket comes back. Mark Cassie threw Helium's hat into the ring for a three-year-old debut, the two-for-two as a two-year-old. Todd's got Promise Keeper and Unbridled Honor.
So Helium is a horse that's never run on a dirt track. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Woodbine guy. Safi Joseph's got a pair, Moonlight Strike and Super Strong.
I've never heard of either one of them.
Marginal.
I mean, that doesn't mean they can't win, but I don't know who they are. We're showing the Gotham and Tampa Bay Derby on the, we have an hour show on Saturday from 5 to 6 Eastern.
Oh, fun.
Let me look if it's FS2 or FS1. Hang on a second.
Nice. Andy looks for that.
FS2. We're on 5 to 6 on Saturday from on FS2.
Excellent.
I know we'll show the Gotham and Tampa Bay Derby, you know, and I imagine we'll try to get a couple other races in there.
Well, and then that sort of indicates that Tampa and on their big day, and there's also the Tom Fool to draw tomorrow. We should have a nice cross-country pick five,
Busher, the Busher also. The Busher looks like an interesting race for the Phillies. The three-year-old Phillies. That should be a good race.
Excellent. Excellent.
And, I always love the Dolphin. It's a good race. And I know Baffert's coming in. Freedom Fighter, is that the worst?
Freedom Fighter, highly motivated, Capo Kane, Wipe the Slate, Awesome Jerry, and or Irish Honor.
The others are possible, so, you know, we'll see beyond top. Yeah, no, it should be a fun race. I'm looking forward to it. Gotham Day always feels like you sort of get over the hump towards your head towards spring, and don't forget you're less than 2 weeks away from spring, basically, or you are 2 weeks away.
It sure feels like there's a little bit of a corner turn the last couple of days with it's cold right now, but you can just tell by the way the sun's hitting. It just feels like
you've got to look at the sun angle. I mean, use your protractor for that. Do you have a sundial in the yard in Greenwich?
I've got it. We have a sundial. Yes, and
he has it properly aligned. I know that would be her job, not yours.
Well, and I'm also judging by the birds, the birds that come to the yard. And
have you seen the first robin yet?
Seen a robin yet, actually. No. I did. We had a pileated woodpecker the other morning.
Nice. My mom has a great bird around the house. Cardinals. She said she saw a couple blue jays the other day.
We've got a blue jay. It's funny that this comes up. You know, we put cat food out for our cats when they're outside during the parts of the year when they're outside all the time. And there's a blue jay that comes down on the porch and eats the cat food. I've never seen anything like it.
You get it all in the show. You really do.
it's the country. This is like the countryside. By the way, speaking of getting it all, how about the Irad Ortiz Paco Lopez video from Friday?
Yeah. Trying to figure out how that video is around, and Irad only got fined $1,000. With all due respect, Irad makes, I assume, after paying his agent, and I'm not begrudging him a cent that he makes, but he makes about $1.5 million. What possible deterrent is $1,000 fine? And you know, the Paco Lopez situation has been much discussed for good reason for a long, long time by horse players, because we've all seen how reckless he can be on the racetrack. And as a result, other riders, unfortunately, one in particular, got badly hurt as a result of his recklessness. And I know he's gotten one 30-day ban and one 60-day ban. But, I mean, I remember when I was down there, I saw him look over to his left, see Joel Rosario inside of him, and almost, you know, knock him over. And he got disqualified, but he's a reckless rider. And it seems like the bad blood between he and Irad has been going on for a while, right? There was that incident in the off the turf, was it the Alan Jerkins, the 2 mile turf race they have? And it caught a lot of attention because of the stupidity on Twitter that people suggested that Irad was helping his brother, which is, of course, nonsense. But as it turned out, what he was really doing was trying to do a number on Paco. And there's been bad blood between them. And listen, Irad may be a terrific rider, and clearly is. He's also a very, very aggressive rider. And I'm not following being an aggressive rider, but he does what he can to win. And the stewards let him get away with it. And the stewards in New York have allowed Irad to, in my opinion, ride recklessly for years with very, very little punishment. And as a result, he's trying to win. So if he's in a situation where he feels he's going to lose unless he does something, he's going to roll the dice, and he seems to get away with it way more than not. Just look at the head on the therapist in that stake race opening weekend at Belmont last year on the turf. So it doesn't discourage aggressive. I don't mind aggressive riding, reckless riding, if it's not punished. It's sort of up to the stewards to deal with this. And I think something like that is more born out of years of probably allowing a lot of things to happen that probably shouldn't be allowed. And I saw that video. Looks like assault to me. And he got a $1,000 fine, and they were both put on double secret probation or something. I'm not sure what a deterrent that is, and I understand that jockeys have gotten in, you know, fights for years. Usually it doesn't take place on video. So, you know, maybe a lot of people don't want to come forward and say what they've seen, so the stewards' hands are tied. Their hands weren't tied here. It was pretty clear from that video what went on. And I was surprised at how slight the fine was. I mean, it's compared to somebody who makes $100,000 a year, right? And that person gets fined $75 or something for cold-cocking one of their coworkers. They probably wouldn't mind doing it again if they could do it for $75, right? So I'm just trying to get into the mindset that doesn't really punish these things severely. I like Irad. I think he's a good guy. I've always got along well with him. But I also think he's a very, very aggressive rider. And I think he's doing what he can to win races. And it's up to the stewards to tell him what he can and can't do. And if they're telling him he can do certain things, which personally I find kind of reckless and potentially dangerous, he's going to do them because he's trying to win. His responsibility is to win for the bettors and the owners and whatever. So I'm not going to criticize him if the stewards let him get away with it. I'm just often surprised that they're allowed to get away with it. As far as Paco, I mean, there isn't anybody who plays the horses that isn't fully aware of, you know, how he rides quite often. He's a, you know, he pushes the envelope. And yeah, he's gotten some severe fines down there, but he probably deserved worse on more occasions. I don't know. So I think this is a culmination of years of allowing certain behaviors. And then this happens, and Ira gets fined $1,000? Really? Not sure what a deterrent that is.
No. And, you know, frankly, if this happened in the, you know, in the jocks room and nobody had seen it and there wasn't video evidence.
That's another thing, right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny. I mean, that's all over the place.
Yeah,
somebody
it is.
Somebody sent me the video on Sunday.
You know, what's funny about it is the range of reactions, because some people, you know, some people are saying, you know what, it clears the air. It's, you know, I've seen plenty of people say, you know what, it's nice to know how much, you know, how seriously these guys take it, and they take it personally and, you know, not inviting fighting, but, you know,
whoever told these guys didn't take it seriously. That's just more Twitter nonsense.
Yeah, no, it was the reaction to it has been, I don't want to say part of the fun,
well,
but,
let me ask you a question. If somebody decided to press charges, what would be the reaction to it with that video available?
Well, I don't see it as that kind of.
I didn't say somebody was going to. I said if somebody did, I don't think the judge would say, it just shows how much they care.
Well,
Steve.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just telling you, it is what it is. I'm not making judgment, you know? It's not. It is what it is. Let's be honest. It's assault. It's not?
Let me ask you this. Certainly there's certain maneuvers on horseback that could be construed, you know, if you extend it to the origin of the interplay, you know, isn't, you know, the potential for what Paco cutting behind him the way he did
tripping
heels
and Irad came over on him. That wasn't Paco. That was Irad coming over on him. I don't want to hear that nonsense. I've watched it many times. Maybe Paco, acted a little bit. But listen, he did that acting job, and he fooled the bottom of stewards, and they took down a horse in the stake race that should never have come down when Paco put on that acting job. Jockeys are allowed to act. Irad came over on him, and I've seen Irad come in like that before. Irad came over on him. Listen, I'm the first one to go after Paco, but not in this case. In this case, this was Irad. I'm not saying they should have taken him down. They should have fined him for it, though. Then they fined him $1,000 for throwing a 1-2. They connected. Sorry, I'm going to disagree with the stewards in this in every possible way.
Well, the bottom line is this you know, this has got to be better policed, you know, off the track. And the stewards, if they were proactive, and this has been discussed a million times, if they were proactive and, you know, showing film and bringing these guys in, you know, and policing them that way, you wouldn't have this situation.
I don't disagree. I think stewards were much tougher in years past than they are now. And this is something that came to a head, but I think it's been going on for years. And my guess is, from what I've seen over the last couple of years at least, that this has been brewing for a long time. This wasn't a one-off where two guys first got hot and, you know, it's just one of those things, and then they shook hands an hour later. This is something that these two guys have been at each other for a while. And I think you're right. I don't think anything has been done to quell that.
I'm glad I promised everybody that.
Yeah, I'm not looking to make somebody a great villain here. I think, as you say, you know, the riders are, they're in a very tough competitive environment. They're trying hard to win. Things happen. I get it. Tempers are going to flare. I totally get that. That's why I think it's more important for the stewards to be the ones who are proactive in doing something long before it gets to this. You know, I hardly think that Irad Ortiz is a bad person by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, in all my dealings with him, he's the opposite. But, you know, it would be nice if this situation was stopped before it got to this point. Sure,
exactly.
He's not happy
exactly.
It happened to us.
Exactly right. Agreed. I appreciate the thoughts on it, Andy. Let me get one more or two more things in with you before we wrap up. You got to say something about Mr. Buff, who just is just a delight to watch.
Yeah, Manny was Manny Franco was very clear what he wanted. He was getting the front in that race, and he wasn't fooling around. And let the chips fall as they may, and I like that. I like that good aggressive riding. I like to see more of that. And that was a quick pace. They were moving. And both he and who's the horse who finished third, the Musical Heart, they both held on well. And Limonite made that big run. The pace was quick, but Mr. Buck got it done. And he's a cool horse, right? He just shows up in these races much more often than not. He doesn't seem to show up when he's out of his comfort zone, but he's New York bred races. He's run a lot of fast races, gutsy races, and maybe this is kind of a cool horse, you know?
Yeah,
probably the only good friend or foe we'll ever see, right?
Well, he's had so few, you know, he only's had really a
handful. Yeah, no, I get it. I'm sort of joking, but not joking, well, it's true, but no, I know. Yeah. He didn't have a lot of foals. He's a good horse, friend or foe.
Absolutely.
I think he ran one really fast race.
He ran. This
114
is funny.
Buyer or something.
Yes,
did he run a really big number once?
And it was on. I believe it was on. That might have been the race on Preakness Day because we were with John Kimmel at Pimlico, and watched the race together. John and I always reminisce about that. That's funny. Going back.
Well, that's really a touching story, Steve.
I got a million of them.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, I want you to put a couple of performances in perspective, one at Aqueduct and one at Oaklawn, because, you know, I had Mike Stidham yesterday. We talked about Mystic Guide, who you've been in front of. You've been banging the Mystic Guide drum from early on, and he runs a race that is really a big, glaring performance. But, you know, on the wet track, and nobody has talked about Zoomer's effort on Sunday with a 104 buyer at Aqueduct in that mile allowance, also in the mud.
Well, we'll talk about one that might matter in Mystic Guide. Yeah, I've always liked Mystic Guide, and I always thought it was funny with Mystic Guide because, you know, these two Godolphin horses, Maxfield and Mystic Guide, are both obviously very good. But, you know, Maxfield is this internet darling, and nobody ever talks about Mystic Guide. Meanwhile, he ran second in the Jockey Club, and he ran faster races, and I've always liked Mystic Guide more. I'm sort of inclined to not be as big a Maxfield fan because everybody's all agog about him all the time, and I've never seen him run a particularly fast race. It's obviously a nice horse. He just, the horse has had trouble staying sound, and maybe, you know, maybe if he can put together more races this year, we'll see if he can, you know, hang with good horses and run some fast races. But Mystic Guide's kind of shown that he has the potential that already. Now, you've got Ghost Zapper, who, right, I mean, got his best race ever was in a wet track. Music Note the Dam, her best race was winning the Ballerina Slot Fest back in, I think, 09. So there is a chance this is a horse that moved up on a wet track, but Howie wasn't favored in that race. How Owendale was favored instead of him is sort of mind-boggling. And he ran. I mean, he looked good. He got a 108 buyer, and you know, we'll see what he does in the dry track in his next start. You know, I'm afraid it'll be in Dubai, but I prefer it wasn't, but it probably will be. And I think he's very good, Mr. Guy. You know, how good he is remains to be seen, but I think he's potentially one of the better, you know, older horses this year. But I don't see any reason why he couldn't be. Certainly a year that's open to that. As far as Zoomer, I don't know. I don't know where that race came from. I do think it was a track that was very kind to horses that were forward. And he seems like a much different horse, and he got off the claim for Rob Atrus. You know, we'll see what he does in a dry track in his next start. Obviously, that race. But, you know, I think he's not a comparable horse to Mystic Guide, because Mystic Guide's a horse that won the Jim Dandy. It was relatively lightly raced. He won the Jim Dandy, second in the Jock Club Gold Cup. So he was a horse that showed that he had the potential to be one of the ones as far as the older horse this year, as far as Zoomer, who knows. He did run a fast race.
Well, and that race, and actually some other races on Saturday, on Sunday, because of the, you know, again, the wet track, and you've made this point for years, is how, you know, fields spread out on these wet tracks, and, you know, Topper T won by open lengths, and Wicked Trick in the allowance feature, and I mean,
Wicked Trick did close. I mean, he did something that not a lot of horses did effectively.
True,
on Sunday.
That's true.
Seems like he ran back in decent form for Linda.
Yeah, in fact, just looking.
Been away for a while.
Ain't Afraid of No Ghost, 1x4. Dial Me Up, 1x3¾. Topper T by 5¾ for Broberg.
Yeah, you see a lot of gaps in slot.
Yes.
Track.
Yeah.
I mean, Oaklawn was. The other thing about Oaklawn on Saturday is that, you know, the wider, the better, it seemed. And that certainly helped Mystic Guide. It helped Essential Quality. You know, the Jackie's Warrior argument. I don't know. My guess is you give him a pass. He wasn't on the rail, but he wasn't 3 or 4 path, which seemed to be too close to the rail as it was. And it was a sloppy track. I don't know what that race would have looked like on a dry track. I do think Jackie's Warrior's connections have said they're doing the right thing with him. They're going to cut him back. You know, and imagine the Derby Day goal would be the Pathé Mile. And then races like the Woody Stevens and Alan Jerkins. And I think that's more than admirable that they very quickly realized we don't have a Derby horse. Let's do the right thing with this horse, and he'll do the right thing by us.
Exactly.
You know, I like Jackie's Warrior. I think he's a really talented horse. I never thought he was a distance horse. I thought he would win on Saturday. Maybe he was never going to win. It's hard to know, though, the circumstances of the track condition. And boy, Oakland, you know, after not being able to run for 2 weeks, then it turns into a slot fest. But listen, at least the right horse is delivered. Monomoy Girl won again. But I'm eagerly looking forward to a rematch of Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver. Do we know where Swiss Skydiver is pointing to?
She just started working back. Mike Mike Welch has been, you know, watching for her in the morning. She worked over the weekend.
Not so. Likely she'll be in the Apple Blossom.
Well, that's still 7 weeks, right?
I'd love to see Swiss Skydiver come back as good, if not better, than she was last year, because I think that she will be a dominant force in that division if she comes back the horse she was last year. I felt bad that she didn't get out of gate in the Breeders' Cup. And no knock on Monomoy Girl, who's obviously, you know, been ultra consistent. But Swiss Skydiver, she'd be authentic on the square. Swiss Skydiver was an unusually good 3-year-old filly.
Yeah.
I think Swiss Skydiver is probably the best 3-year-old filly we've seen since Rachel. Would that be seen fair?
Yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah, I get. Let's see. Who's the three-year-old filly champions? Who have we dealt with?
I think she was a better 3-year-old. I know that, you know, I like Royal Delta a lot. I know she won the Breeders' Cup, but I take my chance with Swiss Skydiver. She put in some super performances. I heard better races. She was
here's the list. After Rachel, Blind Luck, Royal Delta, Questing, Beholder, Untappable, Stellar Wind, Songbird, Abel Tasman, Monomoy Girl, Covfefe, Swiss Skydiver.
On her best race, going long, I'll take Swiss Skydiver.
Wow.
On her best race. I mean, listen, I love Royal Delta. You know, I always love Blind Luck, and she's a terrific horse. And I don't think Beholder's races as a 3-year-old were fast enough to beat Swiss Skydiver's. You know, she did run very well with Ducky Oaks when she lost, though. But I want to say, after the Ducky Oaks, did she not come back? And was she second in the Breeders' Cup, or did she win the Breeders'? She won the Breeders' Cup just half that year, the older? The 3-year-old?
Was it as a 3-year-old? Maybe.
Or did Royal Delta win that? Or did she not? I was there. God, I don't remember.
She won the Distaff in 13 and then again in 16.
So I think it was 13 as a 3-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, it was as a 3-year-old, yes.
Well, Prince of Silmar didn't show up, and Royal Delta was sort of done by then. It was a pretty small field that day. Wasn't it like a 5-horse field?
I can't remember.
I think it was.
Not good at that. Not like you.
Well, I'm sure I'll annoy people, but I'll take the best race by Swiss Skydiver against any of the horses since Rachel as 3-year-old fillies in their best race.
Well, there's today's Twitter conversation without fail.
Conversation that won't include me. Anyway, it's been fun. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Right. I appreciate it. Andy Serling, everybody, and a nice Saturday. Just an hour, he said, for the FS2 show. But it should be a really good, got to think it's going to be an all-stakes cross-country pick five. Almost have to be. The Tampa Bay Derby, they'll use the Gotham. They could use the Busher. I don't know how many is expected in the Tom Fool. And then, you know, the rest of the Tampa Bay card, it could be anything. The Hillsboro, you name it. They've got options for the pick five. So it should be great. Look forward to it. We'll know tomorrow. It's already Wednesday tomorrow. Crazy. Thanks to Andy. This coming hour here, let me give you the lay of the land. Waiting on a visit right now from Gary Falter from the Jockey Club, because 2 o'clock today, they're going to kick off the version, the way they've crafted the owners' conference. And this has become, you know, really something important and successful for the industry. And I think I hear Gary in the background.
Hi, yes, Steve. How are you?
Gary, I'm great. I appreciate the last-minute visit. And today, 2 o'clock, you're going to start the series of the owners' conference, features, essentially, obviously having to adjust to, you know, pandemic conditions. Talk about the plan and how people can participate.
Sure, absolutely. So, this year we decided to do the conference in a series of panels over the next 10 months. We felt that with the uncertainty of people's being able to travel and meet in large groups, it just didn't make sense to plan an on-site conference, which is what we've done the last 7 years prior to last year. So this year it's all online. We'll do one a month. They'll last just about an hour. Tuesdays, first Tuesday of the month at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. I've got a great lineup of speakers and moderators. And one of the cool things about the panels is it's live. It's not recorded. And at the end of each panel, we'll open up for questions and answers from the audience. So this way, if somebody can participate live, great. They can submit questions, and we'll get to as many as we can. We'll also will record each of the panels and make them available later in the week or next week to those who are registered. So it's all done via OwnerView. Anybody that's interested in registering can still register. In fact, they can register anytime this year. Because one of the great things about it is if somebody misses this one, they can register next month, still watch today's conference that took place at 2, and then participate in all the other conferences or as many as they'd like.
I'll put the link out there, but when Gary mentions OwnerView, it's the website that was set up when the the OwnerView and the owner conference concept materialized a few years. It's got to be 7-8 years already.
Yeah, we launched OwnerView in 2012, and that was a result from a McKinsey study.
Yes,
that the Jockey Club hired McKinsey and Company to do back in 2011 to. To come back with some recommendations so we can grow the sport. And one of the recommendations of the 9 that we announced at the roundtable was to develop new tools and resources to encourage ownership. So hence, the website was developed, which is still out there. It's still all free, all the information. And then in 2014, we launched the first annual Thoroughbred Owner Conference that took place at Keeneland.
The website is ownerview.com, and I'll send the link out. And let's give everybody an idea. And in fact, even before I do that about the materials and about the the topics, I should mention, Gary, it's funny. Just minutes ago, I wrapped up with Andy Serling, and America's Day at the Races this weekend, Tampa and Aqueduct. But that also is an outgrowth of the McKinsey report when the Jockey Club started, the Jockey Club tour on Fox. And, you know, one of the things that was recommended was regular exposure to the sport on network television. And that has been an unqualified success. And so for, you know, for people who constantly say, oh, nothing ever comes of these conclaves and these studies, that's nonsense. There's been new owners generated through OwnerView, and there's new players and, you know, new participation in the game, you know, through the TV exposure. And that, you know, that's translated into handle and into attendance.
Yeah, those are all great points. And, you know, this year the conference, being online, it's free. So anybody can sign up and attend as many of the panels as they want. And as of today, you know, we have over 750 people registered, owners from all over the country, even have some international registration. So pretty excited about, you know, the number of people that are interested in participating in this year's conference.
Well, and that's certainly going to grow as things, you know, progress. And let's talk about who is involved and the kind of topics and the questions that prospective owners will have and can be answered. Caton Bradar is going to, you know, handle the hosting duties.
Right.
And I see that Jen Shah, who has been on with me several times, Jen, to talk about accounting and, tax ramifications. You know, talk about the agenda and the kinds of things you're going to, you know, as the months go on, what we can expect.
Right. Yeah, so today we start off with the economics of racehorse ownership. So a lot of nuts and bolts of ownership, and with the registrations we have, a large percentage of them have indicated they're either new to the business or they're considering ownership. So this will be a great panel for those, and especially those who are considering. And then we'll move on from that to next month. You know, how to find your thoroughbred athletes. So we'll have a veterinarian, a trainer. We've got a couple owners, and Terry Finley and Gail Van Leer is an agent. Mike Penn is going to moderate that. So we're going to talk a lot about the auctions, private purchases, claiming, you know, breeding your own racehorses. So that'll go into great detail. And then we're going to talk in May about partnerships and racing syndicates. As you know, there's a new trend in our industry where owners are partnering together on racehorses versus going against one another in a lot of the auctions. So we're going to talk about racing syndicates and the various models and the partnerships that are out there. And Simon Bray is going to moderate that for us. And then we're going to jump into the claiming game in June. A lot of our racehorses, the vast majority of our racehorses, racing claiming races. And we have an awful lot of owners, who have an interest in that. So we're going to get trainers and owners, talking about that. So we've got 10 topics. They're all listed on Owner View. We've got most of our speakers lined up, still working on filling some of the spots, but we'll get them all listed here real soon. And this will go all the way through December.
Excellent. First Tuesday of the month, and I'll put the link up momentarily. And whether you are able to join live at 2 o'clock, or come back and watch it, each of the videos will be cataloged, I'm sure, and
right.
Pretty short order. So if you don't catch up today, that's okay. Given the kinds of people involved, and when you think about Caton, you mentioned Mike Penna of HRRN, I'm happy to answer questions. If people have questions that they'd like submitted as well, you want to get in contact, the people that you're going to hear from in these presentations are readily accessible. People, Gary, one of the real challenges of ownership recruitment, essentially, is that people are shy, and they come up with, what they are confused about or have questions, and they're concerned that it's real basic and that they'll look silly. No, there's no silly questions from anybody about getting involved in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in fact, in today's session, we actually have towards the end a list of questions that you may want to ask a trainer when you're interviewing a trainer, and a list of questions you may want to ask a racing syndicate if you're considering joining a racing syndicate. And our goal with Owner View and the Owner Conference is to help owners come in with their eyes wide open, to give them enough of a knowledge base that they feel comfortable, when they enter the game and feel like they have enough knowledge to be able to, understand what's going on. I had a gentleman call me about a month ago who's been to 4 of the conferences, and he said, "I've learned so much from the panels and from the networking." And that's the only thing we'll be missing out on these virtual is the networking opportunities when owners and the speakers and panelists have a chance to get together during our social events. But, we're hopeful that in the near future, hopefully next year, we can still do a live on-site conference, but we'll see how things go.
Well, this is not just the next best thing, but it's also a valuable, essentially you're creating a library of video presentation that would be would be essential to answer questions and to be used, as a reference tool.
Exactly, yes.
Gary Falter, you can follow Gary on Twitter, Gary Falter, and I'm putting out the link literally as we speak, 2 o'clock today, and we should mention, obviously at Owner View, but I imagine it's going to be streamed elsewhere too.
Well, this is a Zoom. It's a Zoom conference, so everyone who's registered has received a link from me for the Zoom webinar, and we just ask people to register so we can get your email address and send that to them. And then, if they can't sit in on today, just register later, and you can participate in the other 9 panels and/or watch the ones that are video recorded, because we're going to record them all.
Well, go to the link the page for the conference, and scroll down to the bottom where it says type of registration, begin registration, and
right.
Click on that, and then fill in the information and be a part of this. And even if you just want to listen in, and 2 o'clock to about 3 o'clock today, Gary, I appreciate it, and let us know what else we can convey as things get going.
Okay, yeah, let's get a few of these done, and maybe we can hook up again and talk about, you know, how things have gone and what's coming down the road. Appreciate it, Steve.
My pleasure. Gary Falter, everybody, and the Jockey Club, the ownership conference that is essentially going to be delivered to you. You don't have to go anywhere. I mean, they've been fun because there's been some at Breeders' Cup, you know, tied into Breeders' Cup weeks and so forth. And they've placed them in different, as he mentioned Keeneland as well. They've been very successful, and it's really been an entry point for a lot of people into the game. So thanks to Gary for the visit. Doug O'Neill's going to join us now and momentarily, and I'll mention that Nick Luck is going to visit as well. We'll talk to Nick after the top of the hour, about 11:10, 11:15, and obviously the fast-moving story involving Gordon Elliott has widespread tentacles and ramifications. And since we've been on the air this morning, there's been more fallout, including owners taking horses from Elliott. And I'm going to let Nick fill you in on, you know, the reaction and pretty much what should be taken away from this situation. Also later next hour, Papo Morales. I promised Papo was going to visit yesterday. We just ran out of racetrack. Essentially. So we'll get Papo in here, and we're going to look at some of the results from the weekend on using form to win. And boy, there was plenty of money to be made. Doug O'Neill is joining us, and always great to connect with Doug. And he's got some prospects going to try to take a next step toward the Derby Trail and the Classic season. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first of all, Doug O'Neill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. And I reached out to you first and foremost because last night when I saw the situation that Felipe Valdez is facing, he's looking for back surgery to alleviate, bad compression fractures scenario in his spine, and looking to raise, you know, close to $40,000. He's been retired for a few years. He was well on his way to a very nice riding career, and it was derailed. And I saw that you were very generous, toward the early fundraising, and I thought maybe you could tell everybody, you know, about Philippe. They may have forgotten about his career. He's been away from, you know, the afternoon riding for about 4 years.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, Philippe wrote for us, and he worked horses for us, and just had a really good rapport with Philippe, and haven't seen him much lately. And he reached out to me not too long ago and was telling me about this whole situation, and just told him whatever I can do to help. And he's a great guy, and you just see it day in, day out with these amazing men and women, athletes who work alongside the horses. And, whether it's a horse or one of our fellow men or women when they get hurt, you know, it's just a great community that we have, and everyone steps up and is there for everybody. So, just anything I can do to help Felipe get back feeling good. I know he's had some numbness in his leg, his one leg for a while, and the doctors have convinced him that if he has this back surgery, it'll alleviate that. So we're praying that when that happens, that he'll be pain-free and able to live a normal life again.
Well, and as always, you know, you've been when it comes to the backstretch community at large and backstretch assistance, thinking back to the difficult period helped rally the backstretch community the work. Visas.
All the PETA. We had a lot of PETA and stuff. So, no, it's been, just day in, day out, when you see There's so many men and women back here, Steve, that literally have a PhD in horse care. And when you see that every day and you're lucky enough to work alongside them, it's not too difficult that when anyone's in any kind of hardship, whether it's physical, mental, whatever, you know, everyone rallies around. And as much as we compete and want to beat each other in competition, we're it's a shared experience. We're all in it together. And right now, yeah, a lot of just good thoughts and whatever we can do to help Felipe get back to some normalcy.
Well, about 10% raised literally in the first day, and we'll send out the link again later on. And you can always count on Doug to, you know, to really have the heart in the right place, as it were, and always trying to have the horses in the right place. Doug, yes. Is Wipe the Slate shipping? You bringing him for the Gotham?
We are, yeah. You know, he's son of Nyquist, and you know, these Nyquists just make everyone around him look a lot smarter than we are. That's for sure. They're just he was such a brilliant racehorse, and his offspring seemed to be equally as brilliant. And Wipe the Slate's no exception. He's been a little bit of he has a mind of his own sometimes, and the two turns lined up in terms of a problem. But right now, mentally, I just love the one turn mile, because he's all about the one turn right now. So I think that will suit him well. And we got Kendrick Carmouche, who got to know pretty good when I had a little thing back there.
That's right, Philly.
Kendrick and,
Yeah.
So, well, even in New York, last time we were in New York, he would come out. He's just such a hardworking guy.
Yeah, he is.
Amazing. He'll work 6-7 horses in the morning and then goes out there and rides a full card and never complains. He's happy. And he's just a talented rider, and love seeing him in the top of the standings there in New York right now. It's really cool.
Well, coming out of the Lewis and Wipe the Slate with this opportunity, and you know, you right now, you want to find out, you know, pretty much what you've got, and you know, this is the chance. So this doesn't feel like a Derby trail opportunity. It's strictly, you know, a good race at the right time, and you know, for real money.
Yeah, I think he's got Derby physical ability. I know he does. He worked the other day, 111 and change at San Anita, and it was just like, wow. But just mentally, you know, if the Derby was in November this year like it was last year, whenever it was, in September, it would probably suit him better. But, yeah, this year probably won't work for the first Saturday in May for him, but yeah, the Gotham is just, there's so much prestige in running in Gotham. And if he were to jump up and run a big race, which we expect him to, you know, it would be a real feather in his cap. And it'd be a great day.
He's out of a sensational mare. So if there's going to be, you know, staying power, it's going to come from Nyquist. That was a Robeson. That was a Robeson filly that Asmussen trained, that fancy and flashy.
Yeah, no, you're right. That is something that when you see Zenzational, he was a brilliant horse, but he was kind of a one-turn horse. And you know, it's in the morning, you see a lot of the Nyquist in this colt, other than he's a chestnut. He doesn't look like a stud a lot, but just very competitive. He actually has tons of stamina. But he does kind of have that sprinter mentality right now. So hopefully as that matures into letting him settle on the first turn and have something for the last part of the race, then, you know, the particular race will be more of an option. But yeah, right now he's got a one-turn mentality for sure.
Well, and I mean, if you're putting Kendrick on, he's going to be forwardly placed, obviously, because there's only one place that Kendrick goes.
he's very gifted, almost like Tom Weller was for years, where God, they always say you grab a handful of Maine and they rock and roll out of the gate. And like you say, they're forwardly placed. And I think with a lot of the younger horses, you couldn't pick a better place to be than out of trouble, out of kickback. And, you know, if you've got enough gate speed and you got a rider who will let you do it, you know, I think it's an asset. So we'll see how that plays out on Saturday.
Doug O'Neill with us, and not only is Doug getting a horse like Wipe the Slate involved, the opportunity for Hot Rod Charlie, who obviously emerged in the Breeders' Cup, heading apparently to Louisiana. Is that still the plan?
That's the plan. Yeah, he ran a really bang up race in his last and. Coming off a layoff, a little freshening, so we just like the Bob Lewis and Louisiana. He's doing super, and all goes well. He'll have another work or two, or another work here. Is that right? I'm all screwed up on base, but then he leaves on the 15th, so another work or two. He's doing super, and because we got Duel Rosario to stay aboard for the Louisiana Derby. And
nice.
Nothing wrong with that, that's for sure.
No, very nice. Coming out of the third place finish in the Lewis, and has he matured? Has he grown? What kind of development curve is he on?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they're all going through little growth spurts off and on through the 3-year-old season, so. I do think, being with them every day, sometimes it's hard that it doesn't really jump out at you, but I think he's gotten a little taller. He's definitely filled out since a lot of people may have saw him in the Breeders' Cup last year in the juvenile. And yeah, he's a good-looking individual. After Matoli and by the Preakness winner, Oxbow. So the pedigree's there and the ability's there, so. Just need a little racing luck and keep him injury free, and we got a chance to get him to Churchill on first Saturday in May.
Nice. What about the great one? Speaking of Nyquists, you got that Louisiana bred that ran terrific in the Los Al Futurity, and then was still a maiden at the time, but then broke the maiden at the end of January, and I imagine that he continues to work steadily. Went 6 furlongs on Saturday.
He's doing awesome. Yeah, he's supposed to run this Saturday here at Santa Anita, and yeah, he looks a lot like his dad, and he's a spitting image of Nyquist, and it was really not his fault early on in his career. It was more us trying to figure him out, what he wanted to do, and the addition of Winker and two turns and maturity. And all of us getting on the same page, we're really getting to see what he's all about, and just really excited to see this Saturday, because it's going to be not a big field, but it's going to be a tough race. But, Abel Cedillo, who's been riding him and he's been working him, he's excited, and we're excited. So, yeah, big day on Saturday.
Well, and obviously the San Felipe is what we're talking about, and waiting there is Life is Good and Medina Spirit for Baffert. There's three of what? Who else is lined up?
I know Simon Callahan's colt was supposed to go there, but I know he was debating on maybe taking him to the Gotham. Who else you got there?
That's Roman Centurion, and I have not. That's an uncertainty as of, because I checked with Andrew Burns in New York, and Andrew didn't have an answer the other day.
Okay, that could be a bad rumor on my part then.
No. He was a possible. No, he was possible. He was definitely possible.
Yeah, I know he was definitely thinking about it. I think you got the two Baffert. You got us. I think they're only expected 5 or 6. I can't think of who the heck the other couple might be, but regardless, I wouldn't trade places with anybody, and I just couldn't be more happy with the way the great one's doing. He also continues to just fill out and look every day like more and more of a man. So if he runs like he's been training, I think we're going to see a really strong effort.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah. Well, they're going to have to bring the A game with the you know, the two Baffords and whoever else is going to show. I do want to ask about one recent maiden winner, and it was a turf sprint, but what about that Ambivalent?
Yeah, there's a son of Constitution that wrote a pretty big for the 500,000 for in a two-run training sale. So we've been pretty high on him, and he kept kind of knocking on the door like he might do something. But man, he finally busted on through the other day, and after that win, he got invited to the UAE Derby March 27th there in Dubai. So that's his next target race, is heading over to the Middle East.
Well, and you've done that. You did that with Frank Conversation, and ultimately, of course, he did probably his best work on the grass, standing now here in New York. But interesting. So Ambivalent to the UAE Derby.
Yeah. No, and it's an interesting maneuver, but the purse is strong. The conditions they have for the racehorses and the horsemen who work alongside the horses is just second to none. It's beautiful over there and top-notch stable of the barns and the way they take care of everybody and the racetracks pristine. So, I think it'll be a good experience for him. And generally, there's not a lot of other U.S. horses going. So, those races can be, they're not easy, but they're a tad lighter than the races over here.
Yeah, why not? It's real money, and there's points too, and so forth. So interesting. That leads to another question, because I was going to ask you about Wild Man Jack. Are you thinking about the Alquaz for him?
Yeah, that's the dirt.
The dirt is the Golden Shaheen.
Oh, the Golden Shaheen. I'm sorry. No, that's the Golden Shaheen is where we're pointing him to. He came off a big dirt win the other day at San Anita, so we're gonna. And he's been over there before. He's trained really well in that dirt, and so we're excited. I think Fernando Jara, who won on him over there, to get back on him for in that Golden Shaheen. So yeah, we're excited about his possibilities there.
Wow, I'm glad I asked. I wasn't. Nice. So Saturday, nothing else for the stakes on Saturday.
Unfortunately, no. No, we just got.
All right.
Oh, maybe no. Sunday is the San Isabel. We might have San Isabel, but nothing else on Saturday.
Well, that's okay. You got you're in nice shape. You got nice 3-year-olds and plenty else. Doug, I'm glad we got a chance to catch up, and the fundraiser for Felipe Valdez. We're going to send out links to everybody. Let's rally and help Felipe get this surgery. He was on his way to a really good career, won over 700 races before injuries took their toll, and hopefully the community can rally around him to help him with this back surgery.
Yep, solid rider, solid guy. He's a good father and a good man. So no, I appreciate all your help, Steve.
Not at all. Doug O'Neill, everybody. Follow Doug on Twitter, Doug O'Neill 1. Let's take the break here, and we'll come back. Our last break of the morning, Nick Luck will join us to talk about this really difficult and sad episode involving Gordon Elliott. Nick Luck joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.